Hi, my name is Darlene Christensen. Today is November 9th, 2005. Today I will be interviewing an Inupiaq elder, Edith Nariaq.
Junior elder. Yeah.
Okay, today I wanted to go over briefly what the man, women, and children's roles were in everyday life. In class, you had brought up some of their roles, like pertaining to wailing and stuff like that, other activities. Anyway, that is the first question we'll begin with. Can you tell me what are the men's roles, women's roles, and children's roles in everyday life?
Personally, what I have seen and experienced was our dad was always hunting. He always hunted, and mom was the one that maintained warm clothes for him, made parkas for him, and fur pants. They're really nice and warm, and muckluks. Sewing muckluks for him, and she was always sewing, and our roles was just to be children, playing out and sliding on the snow.
Did you guys have like when the different seasons of gathering came, the kids helped in some areas, or was it like...
It wasn't so much as a role, but we learned by watching. We learned by us being associated with our parents. So one of the things that I had learned, and it stuck to my mind, was that story that I told in one class. It'll never go away, it's in my heart, it's in my mind. And that's one of the things that I have learned as a child. One of the stories. And also my mom's recipe. I've always watched her ever since I can remember, I think. She was always making those biscuits, and after she passed away, I just automatically started making them and have been making them. And we weren't, as children, we were children. That's just it. We never had any specific role of chores. We never did, but we did obey. If they wanted us to do something, then it was, you know, there was no question about it that we help out. So we helped do the dishes, or I remember helping as a child, going to go get coal for the stove and helping mom get snow for the to wash clothes with. And so the boys learned at an early age to go out and hunt. It was normal for them to hitch up the dogs and go. My brother would do that, James. And my younger brothers, whether they're 5, 6 years old, they would have a chance to follow. And they learned those roles by just watching and being with, like the boys with their dad and mom, I would be with her. And And I remember playing out and walking in the tundra with some children together, and we would be picking these greens, and we call them kolex, and we eat them. And just being children, playing out. And Achikisak, we did that. It's a seesaw where you stand up and on a board. Nobody does that anymore nowadays. We call it Achikisak. It's two people balancing and going back and forth. One go up and the other one will lift the other person up. It's Achikisak. It's like a seesaw. But we do it by standing up.
Wow.
So the roles that we play in the family or do in the family, it's all, like I said earlier, we see, children learn what they live, so we learn.
Mm-hmm. No, the men, their main job was, or role was getting the food,
mm-hmm.
and cutting it up and putting it away, or the women put it away?
Or both. I remember both, even the uncles, and you know, it wasn't just us, it was uncles and aunts and grandparents. It was a big family core. And the men come in with a whole bunch of caribou. They had already, like for instance, they would cut it up right away, right then and there where they caught it. And then they had to, they would haul it to the sled or to the boat if it was summertime. So that was the role of the men. And when they go home, the women would take over and start cutting up the meat, or either that start cooking a meal for the men. Or the men sometimes would be out there in the tundra or on by the beach, and they would stoke up a fire, start a fire and cook there. Or in a camping site. I remember everybody, when they were out camping and they're in the tents, they would normally make something. It was automatic, I think. So everybody, each family would make something, whatever they can make, caribou soup or sourdough pancakes or whatever they want to bring there. And there would be somebody, either grandfather or somebody, that means everybody get together. They either have a fire outside, that's where they could congregate and meet, or just where our grandparents tent around outside, you know. I remember growing up and people would be eating outside in the summertime, and that was good. And during the day, I remember mom and them before tables, you know, they would get a big cardboard and bring in all the frozen food and everything like that, and that would be an instant meal. That's how, because we were always busy hunting with the dog team, getting ice, chopping wood. So there was a lot of activity within the family. That was the role of the man, was to hunt. And I remember when they first started working, our dad worked with a surveyors. when they started naming, when they started making maps, you know, that our dad was a surveyor, and he would be gone for months, and our mom would. She would also hunt. She loves to hunt seal, I remember. When we went to Barrow, she would do that.
With your, you just briefly talked about your extended family. Like when we were growing up, and some of the things we heard was like, long ago, the extended family used to be really close mm-hmm. with the immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, like my uppas, well, like me and my sister, our kids, they would be considered sisters and brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and my brothers, then our kids would be considered very, very close cousins.
That's how it is in our culture. We treat them like our kids. Their grandchildren are our grandchildren. And that's how our dad grew up. He grew up with his cousins, but they don't consider themselves cousins. They consider themselves siblings, brother and sister. So, that's how it was with us too. In our families, one big family core. It wasn't just the mother and the father and kids. Nowadays, I think, it's broken up.
Yeah.
Because of boarding school, Manaj Gam taught us independence, and but we did, spend time with our parents. But I think that's a change. It really changed a lot. The family core changed a lot after being in boarding school.
Was there anything like some cultures, they give their first child to the grandparents or anything like that?
No, but I do remember when our grandparents, Andrew and Susie, had their first grandchild, like James. It's a natural thing for them to have him, you know. And so that's the way we are nowadays too. It's okay. We want to be with them, just, you know. And it's the same thing. They cherish their grandchildren so much that I remember stories where Aka, Grandma Susie, would cry sometimes for her grandchild, James. So, Mom and Dad needed to go to Barrow because they'd go shopping, I guess, through boat from Kaktomik to Barrow, and they could only take James. So they left Marianne to Mom's sister, Mildred Drexford, Herman and Mildred Drexford. And it was, I don't know how long it took for them. They were gone for a while. And so when they came back, she got used to them. So there was no, I don't think those days, it's like, Her children are her children. Mom and her sister. It's like that.
Yeah.
They're all our children. And so Marianne grew up like that, and in a bad way, she just ended up staying with her aunt, and they eventually adopted her. But she's still considered our sister today.
Another thing that always, one of the things I like to learn too is, do you remember how the Inupiaq people or your elders or stories you heard maybe of how they dealt with grief? Like if somebody died, what did they do to help each other get through it?
I've always remembered the spontaneous response of weeping, crying. There was no restriction of don't cry, you know. It was all openly expressed. Quailing, crying, weeping. And it was okay. And they would automatically just be together, their families, until after the funeral, before, right then and now they would go to the gravesite and start digging. They used picks to get the ice out, and if it's frozen, you know, it was all hand-picked with a pick, with shovels, pick and shovels, 6 feet. And that's how they did it long time ago. And so during that time, the women would be making hot coffee and hot soup or whatever for the men that were out there digging the grave. And there would be a lot of people in the house, just being there with the grieving family. And it's still like that nowadays. Mm-hmm. They go there and then they talk about, okay, what needs to be done, who's going to be doing the funeral. And nowadays they have people, the person who passed away might have favorite songs and favorite Bible verses. They would put it on the program and say that, and there would be people singing special songs, and there would definitely be a family speaker saying thank you so much, you know, for helping. Different corporations nowadays, they help with transportation and sometimes somebody else is somewhere in a different town, Fairbanks or whatever. Nowadays we have this program where that the immediate family can be helped with transportation with a ticket so that they could go home and attend the funeral.
Mm-hmm. One of the things my great upa did when long ago before there was lots of people, when his sister died, they named a hill after her.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would say her name, and that was one of the ways that they helped in grief. You know how people always feel mm-hmm. like they shouldn't say their name or something, or you know, like that. But in our area, or that's what my upa did, and those kind of things that help them deal with the loss.
Ease the pain.
Yeah. You remember anything like that? Besides, I know they name people after them and stuff like that.
That eases the pain. You know that there's hope, and the spirit of that person is in that child, and like for instance, when our mom passed away, there was no reason to grieve because the following year My grandson was born about 18 days later after our mom passed away. Yeah, 18 days later. And then the following year, usually during the memorial, you grieve or, you know, there's a lot of... But there was, seems to be a sense of joy. There was always there. Like, my grandson's birthday was on Memorial Day, so there was a sense of celebration. His first birthday was happy. And then our brother's crew, our crew, Akuchuk's crew, the whaling crew, caught a whale, and usually when Mother's Day came around, it was a lot of grief. I mean, you know, you miss her so much, but it was a spiritual, divinely designed experience for us. We had no time to grieve because we had gotten a whale and we fed everybody on Mother's Day. So what could be more spiritual than that? It was just so awesome. I love to share that because it's the spiritual essence of our Inupiaq culture. So grieving, yes. Cleansing, crying is cleansing. I don't know why some parents, some father, I won't name names, but he had always told his sons not to cry for him. They're domestically violent, you know, they're addicted to alcohol and drugs. So grieving is healing. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, that it's healthy to just cry and weep and wail if you want to, because if you don't, then you get cranky and, you know, it's a natural process. It's, I don't agree with the person who says don't cry, you know, it's that's not right. Nobody should ever have to tell somebody don't cry when I die. That's not good. That's not right, in my opinion. But grieving in our Inupiaq way, there's a lot of comfort when people, they bring food for your family. You know, you're grieving because, and it's a great comfort for people to bring soup or something to eat, like donuts or whatever. So that's a really good gesture. I mean, that's our culture. That's how we... I always remember. And also, in between, before the funeral, the people or the family would request, let's have a singspiration, you know, to comfort the family. I mean, we need a singspiration, and so they do, they have singspiration. And so the funeral comes around and the grave is done, and so then the program's done, what needs to be done, and who's the pallbearers, you know, all is, everything is all planned.
Mm. You mentioned a little bit about the memorial. You guys had 1 year memorials, or you have memorial, you celebrate on Memorial Day, or do you have like 40-day feasts or something
no,
like that?
No. Memorial is we would go to the grave, straighten out the, you know, grave site, clean it out. Just be with them and cry, we have to. And so sometimes when a friend of our mom passes away, it seems like we grieve because we, it feels like our mom is dying again. You know, that's a normal reaction, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or somebody else's dad passed away and then you think of your dad.
So you guys have your memorial in May?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's a holiday.
So you don't remember them having so after the death and the burial,
mm-hmm.
the next year in Memorial Days, wouldn't then you guys celebrate the Memorial Day?
But we don't have that. We don't have any. Like some cultures have potlatches and giving away. We don't.
Okay.
I've never known anything like that in our culture. Just that some families go and see each other in grief and cry and feel. That's okay, that's all.
Kind of as needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not one day set aside.
No. Not one day set aside. Even I remember, who was it, our mom? I think when she passed away, it was really hard for me to go into the church to go feast, Thanksgiving feast, I think. And good thing my uncle and his wife, we saw each other, started crying, hugging each other and crying hard, you know.
Yeah.
It's okay, that's all right. We openly cry. It's not something to be ashamed of.
Okay. Those are the questions that I had for today's session. If there's anything else you want to add that you remember on grief or any kind of stories your grandma or your family told you that you want to share? Was there a way they prepared them before Christianity came?
They would put on their special attire. Their special something that they liked and, you know, put it on their hands or chest or just put on their special attire and bury them. And long time ago they used plywood or wood boxes, and I remember them putting that white, what is that? It's a little bit tougher material.
Yeah. Like what the tents are made out
of? Yeah.
Canvas.
Canvas, yeah. That time, I remember. They would make a box out of wood, plywood or whatever, and then cover it with a canvas. And that's what our oldest, James, did to our mom. They didn't get a fancy. Nowadays they spend $2,500 or whatever for. That was the last work that, in respects to mom, that was the last special work he wanted to do for our mom, a special handmade. And I thought that was an excellent gesture. And I remember, because she was frail, 79 years old. She had gotten small. And I remember when they were taking her out, they put her, wow, that was something. they put her on top of their shoulders and took her out. That was so special. When our mom passed away, I had the opportunity to be the one that cleansed her with the help of a woman that volunteered. And it wasn't a job or a chore, it was an honor to do that for my mom. I don't know, for some reason my sisters didn't want, I don't know why, I never questioned it. It was my role. And then I remember getting the clothes, getting her washed up, and so, and then when we were going to get her and we went to go see her again, for some reason the thing wasn't working right, the morgue, so she got wet. And I said, no way, we're not going to bury her like that. So I took her clothes off and bought new ones, dry ones, and made sure that thing was working.
Yeah.
That's in respect to her, I didn't want her to be like that. I wanted her in her best attire when she was being buried.
Mm-hmm.
And when family members come around, when the body is already in the morgue and in the freezer, some family members come around, and that's when we give them the opportunity to go and see the body. And there's grieving, crying. That's okay, that's all right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That'll conclude our interview today. Thank you very, very much, Edith.
You're welcome.